100 and 2000 UTC.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the June 14th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. World football's governing body, FIFA, recently announced that each player at the Women's World Cup next month will be guaranteed at least $30,000. FIFA says the prize money is more than twice the average salary of $14,000 for elite women's league and club football players, which it detailed in a 2022 report. Meanwhile, the $110 million total prize pool for the 2023 Women's World Cup is roughly 300% higher than what FIFA offered for the 2019 tournament. For reaction to the increase in pay for female footballers, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with African women's football analyst Sam Amadou.
Well, I think it's a big breakthrough for women's football globally, and also seeing how best to improve the quality of life for women's footballers world over, and understanding also how much the FIFPro has invested in ensuring this equality comes to play. And I think this is the long push that FIFPro has been on, and I think they have really made a very, very rich and amazing success, seeing how the discussion started with FIFA over how to improve and also increase the value of financial support coming to women's football, and also improving the returns and massive investment putting into women's football and also the Women's World Cup. I think it's also interesting that the National Federation also have been ending quite richly, and I think that hasn't changed considering what the benefit has been, even not forgetting that the clubs too do benefit from this. So I think for players to benefit this, I think we've seen that of the men happening for quite a long time, and now for women's players to begin to end, I think it's a massive breakthrough for women's football globally, not just in Africa. And I think it's a fresh means of also trying to boost the participation of young girls across the world in women's football. And I think this definitely will go a long way to enrich and also to revive the excitement, revive the love, and revive the commitment of parents to allow their girl child get involved in a sport like football.
FIFA says all 23 members of the winning team will take home $270,000 each. Do you think this will motivate African teams to greater performance at the World Cup?
Well, basically, for the understanding I have, I think, one, it's a very, very laudable initiative from FIFA, and I think it's also a product of the wonderful efforts the FIFPro has had, having to negotiate with FIFA in collaboration with top women's football stars globally, and ensuring that, yes, they could really ensure that they could have a balance and equality to a large extent, ensuring that, well, the men do benefit from the Men's World Cup. Why can't the women, too, begin to benefit? And I think this is rich. This is massive. And from my understanding, I do learned that FIFA will be paying the money to the national federations, but they will also be monitoring the payments and the disbursement of this money to players directly. So I think definitely FIFA has their procedure in place. They have the great plan of how to monitor the disbursements of these funds, that there will be no any far cry from the process, especially knowing how much this process, especially in Africa, has been clouded with so much inconsistency. So I think there's definitely going to be some monitoring that will be done by FIFA and in the disbursements of this pay. So I think it's a very good deal for women's football, and definitely will go a long way to show some improvements in the game, and also the quality of competition will be seen in Australia, New Zealand, and also in future World Cup tournaments.
As a women football analyst, have you been monitoring preparations of African teams to the FIFA Women's World Cup?
For African teams preparing for the World Cup, I think it hasn't been really top-notch, and no doubt we know we have a peculiar problems in Africa, and looking at the travel logistics, and looking at and many other factors that really hamper our teams getting their quality players to even be involved because of also logistic issues. You know, traveling across Africa seems to be more of a hectic situation, and also getting visas for players from other continents who play across the world to get involved in their national team playing. It's been a tough call. But realistically, it's exciting that yes, we have quality preparation. Morocco has been very busy in the preparatory window. They've been involved in so many competitions, and they are also still playing a lot of friendly. Zambia, they've been also very busy. Just a few days ago, they played Tanzania 2 days ago in a friendly. You know, so you just need to see many of these countries. Nigeria has been involved almost after the WAFCON. They've been involved in a lot of friendlies, two pre-tournaments they've had in Turkey, also in Mexico, you know, playing two different teams. So it's been a very busy schedule for various national teams across Africa, and South Africa too. You know, they hosted Brazil on their home front, so they've been playing high-profile friendlies, and they are still looking forward to playing more top friendlies. So I think it hasn't been too bad.
That's Sam Amadu, an African women's football analyst. And Sam spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Abuja, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Fisayo Dairu, chief football writer at acsports.com. And you are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The FIFA Women's World Cup football tournament will be co-hosted by Australia and New Zealand. Four African teams, Morocco, Nigeria, South Africa, and Zambia, will participate in the premier women's competition. The Moroccan and Zambian women are making their debuts. Let's take a look at the first round groupings for the African teams. Morocco is in Group H, along with Germany, Colombia, and South Korea. Zambia is in Group C, along with Spain, Costa Rica, and Japan. The Super Falcons of Nigeria, who are making their ninth Women's World Cup appearance, are in Group B, along with Australia, Ireland, and Canada. And South Africa is in Group G, along with Sweden, Italy, and Argentina. European champion England tops Group D, which also has Haiti, Denmark, and China. The Dutch head coach of England, Serena Wiegman, recently unveiled her 23-player squad for the Women's World Cup.
Yeah, of course, everyone you call is a nice moment when it's a positive message. And for some, it was a little bit expected, for some a little less. So I'm not going to talk about individual phone calls, but we had some very nice ones and some players who you know, were very anxious about this moment.
Because of injuries, Wiegman did not call some key players, including captain Leah Williamson and Beth Mead, England's Women's Player of the Year in 2021-2022. Both players are recovering from knee surgery.
Well, I'm not thinking of that. I think of our opportunities and how do we get prepared. And yes, we have some injuries, but I still think we have a very good squad. We have very good depth in the squad. And now we're talking about the 23 we have and some standby players will train with us. And we get ready with this team. And I think we'll be good prepared. I think there'll be, in the World Cup, also teams that are really, really good too, just like us. And we'll see what brings us. You know, Beth, she's so positive and she's going really well. But we said the time schedule she had, we would have taken so many risks to try and get her to the World Cup. And also she had a personal situation too, so that all added that I that very shortly or very early we said, well, we're not going to take that risk. I'm not willing to take that risk to push her too much and then she gets injured again, because we also have to take care of players and do what's smart and not do what's a little bit naive.
England manager Serena Wigman says with Leah Williamson sidelined by injury, Chelsea defender Millie Bright will wear the captain's armband at the Women's World Cup. Wigman adds that Williamson and the other injured players will definitely be missed.
Most of all, for her, is very, very disappointing and very sad, but that's the same for Fran and the same for Batmeet. And but you have to move on too. So this is unfortunately also part of top sport, that you can get injured. It's a physical game, and you hope, of course, that to make that risk as small as possible. But it can happen, and someone else steps up, and that gives an opportunity for someone else to show and take responsibility. And that's how we approach it. And as you've seen about the captain's role, we had Leah, and then the vice captain was Millie. Mary has done too. So that's how we approach it now.
Wigman says she's disappointed that teams are limited to 23 players at the Women's World Cup, while the men had 26 for their World Cup in Qatar last year.
Yeah, we've spoken about that also at the draw in October last year. And we wanted to bring it to 26. I don't think the 26 make the injuries risk lower. I think you then have more options when something happens and you can keep someone in the squad and take care of it a little better or give a little more rest with more options you have. They didn't make the choice. We're ahead of that. We knew that this effect, so I don't want to go back to that discussion again. The congested schedule, yeah, we all know that we really have, when we move forward, we have to do a better job altogether to make it a little better in all stages and, get some better scheduling for the players.
That's Serena Wigman, the manager of England's Women's World Cup-bound football team.
Sporty greetings. This is Randy Waldrum, coach of the Super Falcons of Nigeria. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook, Twitter, and at voaafrica.com. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. My Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. And if you go to voaafrica.com, you can listen online to the Sunny Side of Sports as well as past episodes. Check out voaafrica.com. Now let's go to Uganda, where former national rugby team captain Edmund Tumusiime is helping young players develop their skills in the sport. In this Encore Sunny Side of Sports feature presentation, Magume Davis Rakawinge tells us more from Kampala.
None of you is communicating whole press, and because you're not communicating press, it means that you're disjointed. Hunter, it's your role to make sure this team is all shouting and yelling. Ojara, do me a favor. Get everyone here to be yelling hold, hold, hold until the ball is lifted up and you call press. I don't want you to be quiet. That call is the most important in this team defense. That call at the rack is the most important. Forget about tackling because you're going sixes and sevens. Do you understand? Guys, we need to be moving as a blanket. We press together as a blanket.
In a dim light evening at Chitande Primary School of Kamocha, a Kampala suburb, rugby coach Edmund Tumusiime shouts instructions at his players as they engage in the final session ahead of the second division game the following day. He tells them communication is one aspect they must master if they are to succeed in their rugby careers. nor even the low light and the coldness of the evening demoralized the budding rugby players from competing for a chance to be selected ahead of the game. One of the players here is 16 years old, Maclem Sewanyana, a scrum half.
So me to hear, always come early, work on night passing, work on the Broncos, 50-meter runs, 20, 40, 60-meter runs. Yeah, try to gain that pace.
Sewanyana started playing rugby some 4 years ago, but is now an integral member of the second division side, Eagles Rugby Club, that was mainly formed to accommodate emerging talented players like him. Sewanyana says he has learned a lot from his coach Tumusime and wants to emulate him. Play for the national team, the Rugby Cranes, and earn a professional contract abroad.
Like, I've learned defense. If you can't defend, you can't put on that team. So I also put in my mind that I have to defend to be on the team. So I kept on working on my tackles, on my speed, so that I could be everywhere the defender is, so that I could tackle him, get that ball back. Because that's the way we can get the ball back.
Another player here is 17 years old, Keith Mugisha, a play half. He says he learned that discipline and hard work pays.
First of all, I've learned timekeeping. Timekeeping is a problem, was a problem. But you get here for late, you get here for training late, you get punished for it. So you make sure the next time you're coming, you come early. Then we've also learned how to put in a shift for what we want, because winning is not easy. You have to put in the work to get the medal, to get the trophy. So we've learned to put in that extra shift, because we train Tuesday, Thursday, but you'll find that on Monday, someone is on pitch because they want... You know, they know what they want. You'll find on Wednesday, there is someone on pitch. You'll find on Saturday, we have no training, but there is someone on pitch. So we've learned that self-drive from the coaches, especially. We've learned that the want, like how to want something and actually work for it. Mm. Yeah.
Sewanyana hopes they're now friends, and rugby brothers will make a dream rugby friends.
We want ourselves to be seen on those international television that Uganda is really on the World Cup, because it's been long since Uganda had been the World Cup. I just want to be like that, be like the captain, be the man of the match every game, and the help of the team. I think every young player out there really wants to push Uganda rugby to the sky limit.
But some of the budding players here have difficult backgrounds. 23 years old Araptai Wile Ateng says he used to associate with bad groups where he learned antisocial behaviors. He says he's glad the game of rugby has turned him into a better person.
Actually, they used to make me aggressive. Actually, there are times when you take those bags. They make you aggressive.
But now
actually,
you're a changed man.
Yeah, I'm a changed man. We have 100% by now. So I can use my mental head to play the game.
The passer winger also has dreams of becoming a legend, just like his coach.
I want to join the national team. I want to be among those top players in the, not actually the national, worldwide. Because I see I can make it through all the life experience I've passed through since childhood up to now where I'm here. I can see sure I can make it. Because life changes step by step. See, once you want change in your life, changes you.
Having retired at an early age, meaning to concentrate on his ICT engineering career, Edmond Tumusime, known as Edu in rugby circles, is arguably the best fly half to don the Rugby Cranes jersey. Yet, despite the praise, Edu remained humble and says he believes he wasn't exceptionally talented, but rather hardworking. He's glad he's impacting the game of rugby by training the young ones. At least twice a week, Coach Edu must spare some time and volunteer, share his skills and experiences with the players here.
We've created a philosophy with the club. We sold the philosophy with the players. They're bought into it, and they're ready to fight for each other. When they are playing, you can see they're brothers, and they're willing to do anything to get victory for the family. And that's how we were able to win the championship in the Central Region, and subsequently qualifying for the playoffs. To see who qualifies for the top national premiership level.
Will he consider coming back into active rugby and play for the national team? Edu answers, it won't matter as long as his impact is still felt on the pitch, at least indirectly.
I'm trying to transform and equip the young generation to take over. In fact, I keep telling them every day, and I think it's some motivation for them, some big motivation for them. I want them to actually make careers out of this sport. You've seen around some of these kids still come from the ghettos, by the way. Some of the boys playing for us come from ghettos and backgrounds which are very difficult. Some of them are actually the sole breadwinners. So I need their lives to be transformed. It's something from a humanitarian perspective. I have to make sure if we can't give them the money to look after themselves and their families, we can equip them and give them the skills and the facilitation for rugby to transform their lives and their families.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Hello, listeners. My name is Edmond Tumusime. I am an ex-rugby international, Uganda. I am an African champion, won the Africa Cup in 2007, and also was the MVP Ugandan rugby in 2006. I currently coach a club called Eagles Rugby Club, but I've also coached different levels in Ugandan rugby. I'm passionate about coaching young children from ages 5 and above, and actually run an academy at Chitante Primary School in Uganda. And you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Thanks, Heather. That's Heather Maxwell, the host of Music Time in Africa, the voice of America's longest-running English language program. Music Time in Africa was founded in 1965 by the late, great Leo the Music Man Sarkeesian. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African men's football, Madagascar will host Ghana Sunday in a qualifying match for next year's Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Ivory Coast. Joining us now from Accra with a report on Ghana's preparations is Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori. Sporty greetings, Kwabena.
Sporting greetings, Sonny. The Black Stars of Ghana will on June 18 meet their Madagascar counterpart in the crucial African Cup of Nations, AFCON 2023 qualifier. This Sunday, AFCON Group E game will be played in Antananarivo, the capital of Madagascar, and the Ghanaians, led by head coach Chris Hilton, in their preparations, invited 25 players, including one local player, and began training in Accra since last Monday. The Black Stars coach Chris Hilton, after the team's training on Tuesday, said he was impressed with the performance of the only invited local player, Hafiz Konkoni. Konkoni had a wonderful season at the just-ended Ghana Premier League and scored 15 goals. Coach Hilton, at the press briefing, talked about the forthcoming match in Madagascar.
We know the value of a win against Madagascar. We know what that means. But we also know that we can't take them for granted. And as regards the small and easy games, you know, they're on.
At the press conference was Black Stars and Genk player John Pinsel. The 25-year-old attacker scored 17 goals for his club in the just-ended Jupiler Belgium League. He expressed his confidence and readiness for the weekend game against Madagascar.
Yeah, as you can see, we still have the belief. The belief is still there, the teamwork, you know, the commitment and everything. So even though they had a little bit ups and downs in their club, that doesn't really affect them in their national team. And with their mentality, they are really ready for it. And we always talk about it. And, you know, their full focus is on the game. And, you know, the pass is the pass. And they are always focusing on the game, which is against Madagascar. So I think every player who is invited here is really ready to give it for the fans and for Ghanaians.
In AFCON history, 4 times winners, Ghana, for the past 40 years, has not yet won the Continental Trophy. The Black Stars were runners-up in AFCON 1968, 1970, 1992, 2010, and 2015. The Black Stars are leading Group E with 8 points, and a draw on Sunday can qualify them to AFCON 2023 in Ivory Coast. For the Sunny Side of Sports, Kwabena Ofori reporting.
Thanks, Kwabena. This Sunny Side of Sports programming note, Mukbil Yabaro will be hosting the show on Thursday and Friday, and I'll be back behind my trusty Voice of America microphone on Monday, June 19th.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. Coming up, golf and Major League Baseball news from the AP's Josh Rountree. But Josh begins with a newly crowned Stanley Cup ice hockey champion.
History on the ice in the desert. More from Dave Ferry.
The Golden Knights have won the Stanley Cup for the first time in their 6-year history by clobbering the Panthers 9-3 in Game 5. The Knights busted open the clincher with a 4-goal second as Alec Martinez, Riley Smith, Mark Stone, and Michael Amadio all scored in the final 9:32 of the period to make it 6-1. Stone had a hat trick, including a shorthanded tally that opened the scoring. Aiden Hill turned back 30 shots for Vegas, which also received goals from Ivan Barbashev, Nicholas Waugh, and Nicholas Haig. I'm Dave Ferry.
On the diamond, Baltimore took down Toronto 11-6, 3 RBIs for Adam Frazier, who helped the Orioles to a 5th straight win.
There's a lot of talent in this room here and down below, so we know we got to bring it every night, and you know, everybody's doing everything they can to contribute to a win.
In the Subway Series, the Yankees dropped the Mets 7-6. Yankees reliever Clay Holmes embracing the tradition of the crosstown rivalry.
It's fun. I mean, these are the type of moments that, you know, you want to pitch in, that you dream about pitching in. You know, obviously, this is always a great atmosphere. You know, Yankees Mets, you know, to play here and to be able to just come in a big moment and help the team win.
The Twins beat the Brewers 7-5. Carlos Correa with a key 2-run bomb for Minnesota. The Angels topped the Rangers 7-3. Hunter Renfro went deep for L.A. And baseball's worst team, the A's, edged one of baseball's best teams, the Rays, 2-1 in front of a season-high crowd in Oakland. 27,000-plus fans showed up, many of which to protest the team's potential move to Las Vegas. And in golf, PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan is recovering from an undisclosed medical condition. This according to a statement from Monahan and the PGA Tour Policy Board Tuesday. That statement indicated that in Monahan's absence, Chief Operating Officer Ron Price and Executive Vice President Tyler Dennis will take over the day-to-day operations. I'm Josh Rountree.
Wraps up the June 14th edition of the show.
I get it.
Thank you for tuning in.
VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.